Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
This is a content warning. The interview that you're about to hear contains themes of suicide that some listeners may find confronting.
Living free.
And welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio. Hi, I'm Bill, and with my show co-hosts Michael and Zakia, I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that this land was stolen and that sovereignty was never ceded. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that, that assist in recovery from drugs, alcohol, gambling, and food addictions. Our guests share their recovery story and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Please note that Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please consider your well-being and that of others while listening. My guest today is a compulsive gambler who's recovering with the help of Gamblers Anonymous, so I'd like to welcome Noah to the show. Hi, Noah.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Now, Zakia is going to run the show today, so Zakia, over to you.
Hi, Noah.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
Hi, Bill and Michael. I'm happy to be on the show today, and I would like to say thank you for reaching out to us to tell your story. It is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We usually start by talking about your childhood and growing up, so you can tell us about yourself and early years.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up with my grandmother. She helped raise me. My mother couldn't raise me as she was she's a drug addict, and my grandmother raised me from since I was a baby up until I was 15. My childhood was it was pretty good. My situation was unlike other people my age, but overall I think that it was better than some of the other people who were in my situation and were living in out of home care. I never did very well in school in regards to finding friends and doing all that. Schoolwork was all right. I was a pretty good student. But the connection between other people my age, I did struggle in finding a connection and kind of like-mindedness. Finding that rapport was difficult, and they couldn't relate to my situation. I think that was probably something that played into it. But I grew up and I ended up moving out when I was 15. My grandmother was quite a assertive kind of. She was very strict and very by the book, black and white kind of person. And she was raising me like she was raised. She wasn't doing it maliciously. That's just how she knew how to love. So there's no ill will to her, but it wasn't what I needed at the time of my age. So I decided to leave when I was about 15. I bounced around between a few family members' houses. I went to my mum's for a little bit, and I bounced around a couple of my aunts as well. All on my mum's side. I never knew my father. So that also, that dynamic was also a bit, it was a difficult one to kind of figure out where I kind of fit into the world. Probably why I didn't get along with people my age was, they had mums and dads, yeah. They lived a white picket fence life with a dog and siblings, and I didn't have any of that. Yeah. I have a sister who I wasn't raised with. She was my half sister, and she was raised by her grandparents, and we so that was also a different dynamic as well. and I moved out. I went to, when I was in high school, it was about the same time that I moved out, I went to a couple of different high schools. My first high school was an all-boys Catholic high school. Absolutely not something that I needed or wanted to be. Yeah. I definitely made sure everyone knew that I, you know, didn't want to be there.
And high school.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, it was just not not what I wanted to do. They had their views and I had my views and we didn't get along. But I ended up settling an hour away from where I grew up with my aunt and changed high schools a couple of times. And I ended up down here, an hour away. And we tried to find some kind of symphony, kind of tried to find some homeostasis, tried to find that, you know, trying a bit of normal, and found a new high school that I tried to go to.
So how was the new high school like?
It was definitely better than an all-boys Catholic high school. It was a very small school. It was just about 20 students, and it was within a TAFE, and they just ran a small year 11 and 12 unit out of there. So it was much better than what I'd previously experienced.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it up until I didn't. I found myself drawing away from it. I ended up going part-time a little way into my education. So I doubled the time that I needed to be there, which probably wasn't the right move. I didn't want to be there for a long time, but I decided to be there for longer anyway. I was just drawing out the inevitable. So after I turned 18, I did decide to drop out, which I regret now, but I can always go back.
If you talk about your high school, have you had any friend, like, companionship at school like that?
Yeah, I definitely had friends, but friendship never came easy to me.
Yeah.
Finding somebody to kind of who I could connect with was difficult. I have had a longtime friend who has stuck with me for 5 years actually. We bonded over a shared interest in business. So I think it was friendship second and business first. I still struggle with him, getting along with him outside of a business setting.
Yeah.
Kind of finding commonality and in day-to-day activities was never my strong suit.
How life took you to gambling?
Yeah. So while I was in high school, I turned 18. And you know, what do you do when you turn 18? Well, you have your first legal drink and then you go to the casino. So my mother, of course it has to be her, took me to the casino on my 18th birthday, and I walked into the doors, I sat down, and I just fell in love with the atmosphere and the environment, you know, the lights, the sounds, the smells. Always came back to the smell. I still to this day, I walk past somebody who's got a certain cologne or perfume or something, and it takes me right back there. And I fell in love with the atmosphere. And I think what I really enjoyed was the escape from reality. I didn't want to deal with the personal things that were going on in my life, so I wanted to find a way of
see new things, to experience new things.
Yeah, maybe, probably not experience new things, but just not to experience my own life. I didn't want to deal with the things in my own life. So I used it as a kind of a coping strategy to not, you know, focus on my mum and my family and anything negative going on in my life. I used gambling as a coping strategy for that, which was unhealthy. And I could be anyone I wanted when I was there. I could be Jeff. I didn't have to be Noah. I could be anyone I wanted. So I would make up these elaborate stories and lies to the people who were gambling with me about anything. I just, you know, I was a tech entrepreneur, or I was the son of a, I was a trust fund baby, or you know, I would put on accents and I'd pretend to be British, and there was no reason for it, but there was a thrill of being able to be whoever I wanted to be, and I was seeking all the validation from all these people to kind of smother
to fit in,
yeah, and to smother my frustrations and uncomfortability and with my own self. So I was just, you know, enamored by that lifestyle, and I would be a big shot, and I wanted to be the most important person in the room, and so I would be throwing around lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
And everyone would, you know, all the people, the strangers would come and, you know, come around me and like all excited about all the big bets that I'm making, and I just fell in love with that. So I just kept on going back to feed that validation.
Yeah.
But the longer that I was there, the less I wanted that, and more it transformed from that, the lifestyle, to just sitting there
to say things that you are not.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. Like, it is interesting the way you're mentioning, like, oh, I came from different country. Most of the time I'm trying to fit in.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to say different things, but I really don't feel that who I am. Or I don't know, this uncomfortableness is inside you trying to seek validation from people. At the end, you don't feel like happy, don't you?
No, I
even they accept you the way you present yourself. At the end, when you are with your own self, that you feel, oh, that was not me, you know.
Yeah, I didn't want to show them who I really was. I wanted to come up with a front of this persona, of this person who I thought that these people would like to be around.
Yeah.
And I knew that I would leave and I would never see these people again, so coming up with the lies didn't matter. It was just in the moment, it was fun, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I didn't care that I was lying to all these people. I mean, they were strangers to me, they didn't matter. It was just to feed my sick sense of you know, validation of what I thought I needed at the time.
Yeah.
But I don't think that lasted for very long. It definitely turned into just wanting to be there. I stopped talking to people as the gambling went on, and I found myself just going there to bet and to gamble for, you know, I lost the value of money. It was just bits of plastic to me. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
And it was just about being there in the chair to spend as much time as I wanted. I hear a lot of people who I talk to who also have gambling addictions. Oftentimes, the start of their addiction, it's about the validation and about the money and those two things, you know, the thrill of the chase. But by the end of it, it's just about spending as much time away from your problems and sitting in the chair to just let that world kind of encompass you. And I like to say that I would put on kind of these goggles that were, you know, very narrow viewed, and I would just, all I wanted to do was stare at a table and place my bets and be there for as long as possible. I didn't want to have anything to do with anyone else. And that was towards the end of it. There was, you know, a lot of time in between that.
Thank you for being in the show. Let's take a short break.
Friends of 3CR, Les Thomas and Kavisha Mazzella, are joining forces for a powerful Gaza music fundraiser and to launch The Firing Line, their stirring anthem against genocide. After a shock venue cancellation, they found a new home at the Curtin Hotel, opposite Trades Hall on Lygon Street in Carlton. Join them 3 p.m. on Sunday, August 31. Book now through Austix or the John Curtin website. Every ticket helps get vital support to those who need it most in Gaza. A 3CR supporter.
Out there on the firing line, see the faces left behind.
Breadline, the new show from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union.
So put down that job plan and listen to us.
6 p.m. every Monday night on 3CR Community Radio.
Choose to use your voice print to access your account when you call us.
This is the Living Free Show on 3CR on your AM radio, dot on 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just search 3CR Living Free Show and check out our website. Contact us via phone or email today. I'm talking with Nova about recovery and compulsive gambling through Gamblers Anonymous. Okay, Nova. Where gambling took you?
Yeah, gambling took me to some places that I never thought that I would end up. People who I never thought I would associate with, places that I never thought I would be, and feelings that I never thought I would have. Starting with the places that I never thought I'd be. Now this is an odd one, but I definitely found myself. When I was gambling, finding myself in locations that I'd look around after I had a gambling session, and I was feeling, you know, terrible about myself, and you know, wishing, you know, why am I like this? Why have I done this? And, you know, regretting all of the decisions that I just made, but you know, I still decided to go do those things. But I would look around and whether I was in an illegal underground casino or if I was in, you know, some shoddy alleyway behind the casino, just, you know, mulling over my thoughts. And I think, you know, why am I here at 4 a.m. on a Tuesday when I should be at home in bed? And some of those, you know, feelings that kind of came up that would make me, you know, think about what I was doing and, you know, but obviously, you know, in the moment, I would have those thoughts, but they would pass relatively quickly, unfortunately, and I would get back into the rhythm of, you know, thinking in a negative way and idolizing gambling again. You know, thinking that gambling was actually the solution to my problem. You know, I got into debt and I got, you know, I owed people money and I had no money of my own. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go and gamble more so I can get more money, which was just the wrong way of thinking. So some other stuff that, would, you know, end up happening was I would, go and associate with people who were absolute degenerates, just like me. But I thought I was different. I didn't want to be like them, even though I was doing the same things. I was treating people in the same negative way of, you know, uncaring, kind of sociable. I would cancel plans with my family and friends, and I didn't want to be anywhere or do anything that wasn't gambling. And if I had to do something like work or like going to a social event, I made sure everyone knew that I didn't want to be there and I hated every second of it, and I made other people miserable, which was terrible. And in the moment, I didn't realize that, and I didn't realize that I was having an effect on other people. I just thought that the effect of the gambling was just a financial thing on me, and I was just destructing, you know, my own life. But I know that now, looking back, I can see that what I said and what I did, those actions affected everyone around me, and then in turn affected kind of a wider range of people than I thought they did. So my family and friends have, you know, brought up things that I have done and said that I never thought would have been a, you know, something in the moment. I just didn't connect to me that what I was doing was quote unquote wrong. Yeah. But they bring it up to me now, and now I can understand that, you know, the way I was acting was, you know, unfair.
Sorry, I missed that part that you you've been in high school during COVID-19, and do you think that COVID-19 has impact on your gambling life?
I think that it definitely...
And somehow, because COVID have lots of impact in human beings' life, do you think that had some impact on your life?
It definitely didn't help, and it definitely took me to gambling in a way of that it brought down my mental health, so I was probably more susceptible to picking up that gambling addiction. I wasn't gambling during COVID, but it definitely helped kind of pave the way to finding that gambling addiction.
Oh, thank you. Why did you seek for free from gambling?
Yeah, so the longer that my gambling went on, and, you know, I definitely from an early point realized that I had a problem for myself, but as I said before, I didn't care that I was affecting myself, that I was, you know, it was just, I can lose all my money, you know, it doesn't affect other people. But once I started to realize more and more that it was affecting my family and friends in a negative way, I didn't want to be that person. And the feelings of self-hatred kind of worsened because of that. And I definitely thought of other ways out rather than, you know, seeking help for myself. I thought, you know, suicide is an option. I can definitely opt out that way. And that would solve my problems. It would solve other people's problems. They wouldn't have to deal with my crap anymore, and everything would be fine. I'm glad that that is not the decision that I went after. I do remember a couple of times leaving the casino, and there's a bridge right outside there, and I would stand there and I'd look out and think about it, consider it. I would always walk on, but that's definitely something that came into my head. But I luckily knew about GA a lot prior to kind of discovering I had a gambling addiction, and I knew it was a thing, so it at least I knew I could search it up on Google and be like, GA meetings near me, and I knew that it was a thing. There was a couple of key moments in my life that towards the end of my gambling career that made me really rethink what I was doing. The first one was being at work, looking at my phone, coming up with a news story that an illegal casino in my area had just been busted, and I was there two nights prior to that bust, and I was watching people who I knew being walked out in cuffs, and realizing that could have been me. So that was a really big one of kind of self-awareness and like, geez, what am I doing with my life? The second one would definitely be, I had left the casino one night, and I'd missed the last train for that night, so I had to wait 3 hours in the train station in the cold. It was winter, and it was just miserable outside. And I was sitting there, and I was sitting next to a PowerPoint, so I could charge my phone, just contemplating life. Not, you know, I didn't know what to think. And somebody sat next to me, somebody who clearly had it rough, and he just started a conversation with me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll just continue this conversation. It's 4 a.m. on a, you know, on a Wednesday night with this random stranger in the dark, secluded part of a train station. Why not? What else? What could go wrong?
Yeah.
And he just started talking to me about just his life, and it was the most sincere conversation. And at one point he brought up that he was a compulsive gambler.
Oh.
And I was just sitting there, and I was just listening to what he was having to say, and I confided in him. I said, "Yeah, I've got a problem. I also have a problem. I don't know what I'm doing." And nothing was said that was so earth-shattering, but it was just that simple conversation. It was right when I needed it. the most random time in the random place. I got on my train, and on that train ride home, I self-excluded myself from the casino. I self-excluded myself from all of the gambling sites, and I started going through that process. I have to say, self-excluding yourself from a casino, bloody hard. They yeah. make you jump through some hoops. They do not want you to be banned from you. They don't want to ban you. It took me at least an hour on the phone, and I spoke to multiple different people to finally get myself banned. And they wouldn't even let me ban myself for my whole life. It was like, no, we can only ban you for 3 years. I'm like, can't we just ban? I don't want to go back. And then the third time was after I had actually been to my first meeting, and I went back to gambling.
Yeah.
The gambling got really, really bad, and I was just all in or nothing. It was probably the deepest part of my thought of suicide was like, well, I'll just go all in, and once it's done, I'll just end my life and it will be over. And I found myself late at night screaming on the phone to my aunt, screaming for money. And I was, in the moment, it felt like I was on that phone call for years. It was only a couple minutes, but just everything I said was so negative, and so I'd never raised my voice to her. I'd never done anything like this. And I hung up. I was so angry, so mad, but that anger and frustration passed practically instantaneously when I just realized what I'd done. And I went to a meeting two nights later and I haven't been back since. So that was, that moment took me back to GA, and I was done.
Oh, great. What's the different things about GA helped you more?
I think the biggest part of GA was the camaraderie with like-minded folk, and listening to my story in other people's kind of hearing my story in other people's stories. They did different things, and they had different lives, but they did similar things. They lied just as much as me. They deceived just as much as me. They put themselves in situations that they shouldn't be putting themselves in, just like me. For a reason that didn't make sense. If you looked in on it, you couldn't comprehend why somebody would do these things. Just like when I called up Gambler's Helpline and I said, I have a gambling problem. Can you help me? What do I do? And they said, just stop. I was like, oh, I mean, I never thought of that before. And these guys, they, you know, we all, you know, gambled our lives away, our time away, our money away for nothing. There didn't seem to be a reason. But we were all there under the same roof seeking assistance from each other, and there was something very comfortable about that. And it was a different comfort that I got from sitting in a casino. It was a peaceful comfort. I could be myself. I could actually be myself there, rather than making up these random characters of personas of who I thought I wanted to be.
Yeah.
But there, I could truly be myself. I could delve into my deepest, darkest kind of thoughts and things that I'd done, and there'd be no judgments. It would just be understanding and listening. Not even to give me advice. It was just an ear. That's exactly what I needed.
Let's take another short break.
Join us for a concert, speeches and food at Collingwood Yards to raise awareness for International Overdose Day. Come together as a community, pay our respects for those that have passed and survivors, friends and families. Performances by Resident Frequency, catering by Food Not Bombs, supported by Inner Space Crew and CoHealth. On the 29th of August, 2 to 4 p.m. Resident Frequency are a 3CR supporter.
You are a shadow, transparent, a memory once human. You pass through me.
This is the Living Free Show on 3CR Digital Radio. live streaming on 3cr.org.au. And we are talking with Noah about compulsive gambling and his recovery to Gamblers Anonymous. What was like going back to GA after relapse?
It was probably one of the most difficult things that I've done in recovery, second to changing my character. But going back was terrifying. I knew all of these people. I'd been going to GA for about 2.5 months. I went back to gambling, and I was scared that I was going to let all these people down, and I was going to be judged for it, and I was humiliated. I knew, though, that I needed help, so I had to go back for myself, but I was really worried about what all of these people were going to think. So I walked in, and it was harder than going to my first meeting. And I came in with my 30-day, 60-day, and 90-day keychains, and I handed them back, and I sat down. I didn't say anything. I just said, "Hi, yeah, I'm back." And nobody kind of, they just said, "How you been? How's it going? Good you're back." It was like I never left, and it was just getting back into the rhythm of things. I have to say that I do still kick myself, because over the for the 3 months that I had left, yeah. One of the members who was a longtime member had passed away during those 3 months, and he did my kind of opening. He introduced me to everyone on my first meeting, and he debriefed me about what GA was, and he actually drove me to a couple of my meetings early on, and I found out that he'd passed away, and I did kick myself a bit, and I still kick myself for not being there and not being able to go to his funeral and stuff.
Yeah.
But the important thing is everyone there had a lot of those guys had relapsed as well before. So everyone understood that you're here for the right thing. You're here for the right reason. You're coming because you want to get help. And it doesn't matter if you relapse and come back, and if you do it again, it is part of recovery. So it was terrifying, but as soon as I sat down, it was the same. It was all good. It was just like I'd been there, and that comfort came back quite quickly, and the camaraderie was even more, because I got a lot of validation. I got a lot of, but the good type of validation. A lot of people were, you know, thank you for coming back. And I now know, after being in the program for over a year, that when people come to their first meeting or come back after relapsing, it's amazing, because it shows that the program does work. Because people come back, they know that GA works.
Yeah.
Yes, they've had a slip up, but GA does wonders and brings people back. And actually, I was at my meeting last night, and somebody who had who'd been away had come back after relapsing, and he was there in his first week. And I don't think I could do that. I think I would need to take a week. I think if I relapsed again, I wouldn't be able to go to my next meeting. I think I would have to take at least a week to kind of to sit there in my thoughts and gather myself before going. But he was there, bang on, and I was like, mate, I've been in recovery for a year and a bit, and you've only been here for a little while. I couldn't do what you're doing, so really good job. And just trying to make sure that he feels extremely welcomed, and that's exactly what I felt. It's just how I was treated when I came back. I wanted to make sure that he felt exactly the same way.
How long you were doing the GA? For how long? And the experiences you can recommend to people?
So after my relapse, I've been in the program for a year and 2 months. Yeah. And the most important thing that has helped me and continued to help me is getting involved in the program. I started when I first went to GA, and I was there for 3 months. I was there because I wanted to solve a financial issue,
mm-hmm.
but not an emotional issue. And I was there probably more for other people. I was there because I was hurting. I've hurt my family, and they're like, you need to go to GA. You need to go do this. And so I went, and I wasn't there because I truly accepted that I had a problem and that my life was unmanageable, which is step one. And after the 3 months of being away and going back to gambling and going and realizing I needed to go back, I accepted in myself fully that I have a problem.
Yeah.
My life is not manageable to continue with this problem.
Yeah.
And not only do I have a problem with gambling, but I've got an emotional issue here that is making me do these immature things and is not
helpful.
It's not helpful. It's not sustainable.
Yeah.
So I went back for myself, not for anyone else, not because somebody was telling me, not because I thought that's what I should do. It was because I needed to. And every week when I go to my meeting, it's because I need to. It's sometimes I don't want to. A lot of times I don't want to. A lot of times I'm too tired, or I want to go to the movies, or I want to go do something else. I don't need to go to a meeting. I don't want to go to a meeting, but I know I need to. I know that for me to continue to become a better person and to change my character and to kind of adapt, I need to go to those meetings and to be a part of the community, not only sitting there and listening, but helping with running it and kind of letting GA kind of wash over my life and make it the most important thing, because without GA, I wouldn't be here.
Oh.
Where would you be?
I'd be dead, or I would be in jail, or I would be in a gutter somewhere, sucking my thumb and, you know, blaming all my problems on somebody else.
Yeah. You mentioned two things I want to touch on. One was spirituality, the spiritual side of the program, which people probably would like to know a bit about GA and the spirituality. And the other one was maturity, which I think recovery helps you a lot with maturity.
So on the spiritual side of things, I never considered myself spiritual or religious or anything in that kind of nature. After I was raised religious and I rebelled against that. And when I first came to the meetings, it's definitely something that stuck out, that it was the elephant in the room. It was something that I wasn't happy that they said the word God and that was a part of it. But really quickly afterwards, and after a few other members explained that this God word is just a word, it's just three letters, it's just G-O-D, it could be anything you want.
Dog spelt backwards.
Exactly. Yeah. And one way of this kind of, this higher power that we talk about in recovery, one of our members referred, it could be your door handle. It could be when you walk out your door, that could be your higher power. Just... It doesn't need to be this big thing of, you know, you've got to pray to a God and you've got to, it's not about that. It's about something outside of that realm, which it's hard to explain. For me personally, that higher power and that spiritual is the GA program. And I put my faith in GA and in the program and in the meeting that will help me rather than a God or something like that. But it, you know, everyone has their own version of the higher power that works for them, which is brilliant. It's not one size fits all. You can make it fit
how you think to relate yourself to the program, which I'm going with Bill to
Al-Anon.
And like people around that focusing about high power a lot, and I was thinking like how I can relate myself, like not believing in God, you know, somehow like find the philosophy behind this high power. And I was thinking the same way like you, like we can relate how the story can help us to recovery. Which is amazing that you found that.
Another kind of line in the GA program is principles before personalities.
Yeah.
So somebody could be very religious and very, you know, that's their whole thing, but they're in the program because they want to get help and they're a gambling addict. The principle, why are they there?
Yeah.
And I focus on that. I don't need to focus on, you know, anything else. You know, it's just why are they there and what are they here to do and what, you know, and how can I help them rather than this whole, you know, this G-O-D word, which is, yeah, dog spelled backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then maturity. I mean, I'm very young and I was a kid when kind of this kind of all started, and you know, there's a level of immaturity there as a child. You know, I wasn't developed, and my brain is still developing, and I didn't have much life experience and stuff. But the immaturity that I got from the gambling was more than just a teenage general, you know, immaturity of doing the wrong thing and rebelling and stuff. It was beyond that. It was taking everything too far and not caring about anything in life but this gambling, and ignoring help and ignoring other things that used to be important to me. And the big aspect of GA, of helping me with that, of helping me become a more of a mature person, has pushed me kind of way past I'd find my years. And so I had problems connecting with people my age when I was younger, and now I have the same problem after going through the program and continuing to build and develop my character and become more mature and focus more of my life. And now I have, it's a different problem of connecting with people my age, because they haven't been through a program like this, and the way I think and the way I act, I'm constantly checking myself and constantly trying to be better, whereas people my age are not thinking like that because they're, you know, carefree and they're just, you know, do what they want and whatnot.
They don't have the baggage. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No. And it's okay. But what it does do is, yes, I might not be able to connect with them, or they might not be able to connect with me, but because I have this newfound maturity, I'm able to put that aside and find commonality in other ways that I would have tried to ignore prior to that. And I'm like, oh, I'm a mature person. This person might not be mature, but that I can be the bit bigger person and I can still connect with them.
Before you mention you're running the GA right now, how is it like?
Yeah, I really enjoy being on the other side of the table and helping with kind of the things outside of the day-to-day things, and building our group to be better and bigger. The person who I mentioned before, a longtime member who passed away while I was relapsing, and he was the go-to guy and he ran the meeting. And after he died, there was, in my home group, there was a bit of uncertainty of what the group, what our meeting was going to look like, and everyone was kind of trying to piece it together, and I'd come in just as that kind of that was all up in the air, and we were trying to find ourselves and figure out how we wanted to run the meeting. And I felt like I could be of assistance there, and I wanted to help. I wanted, for myself, I wanted to be more a part of that meeting. So I started chairing meetings, and that went on, and I just kept on chairing and kept on chairing. And I think I chaired for 5 or 6 months straight. And just recently I said, okay, we had a group conscience, which was kind of just a group meeting to talk about where the group was going. And I said, we need to have a revolving chair, because I can't chair every meeting. Other people need to have a chance. And the other thing is, I've kind of been able to have that opportunity to chair for that long. And now I'm looking at it not only as a way of, okay, I need to be involved, but now I'm like, other people need to be able to get involved. So kind of I'm trying to go beyond the getting involved. I want other people to get involved because it's a part of recovery. It's part of the steps. You need to get involved and be of service to the GA community. And I've been lucky enough to attend other people's meetings and see how other people run their meetings and meet more like-minded folk, get more camaraderie. We do hear the same stories over and over again at our home meeting, and it's great when new members come and they speak about new things and we get to hear different aspects of it. And on top of that, I can go to other meetings and go and hear things there. I'm going overseas soon, and I plan to go to GA meetings in other countries and other cultures and see what it's like over there. We're all, you know, studying from the same book and the same principles, but everyone does it differently, and I'm interested to see how other people do it.
Yeah.
That's the show for today. So I would like to thank you, Noah, for sharing his gambling recovery story with us and talking about how Gambling Anonymous helped his recovery. And thank you, Noah. It was interesting for me that you were seeking for help. Now you're helping people. And it is really, I really admire the way you're helping people and reaching out to tell their story. It is amazing. Thank you for being here in the show. I hope that you will be able to join us again next week when Michael will be discussing recovery from alcoholism with Lisa, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Coming up, we have Bomb War, The Spirit of War, hosted by Uncle Talgun Choco Edwards. Join
Uncle Choco in The Spirit of War on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarns. If anyone would like to find out more about Gamblers Anonymous, you can phone them on 03-9696-6108, or you can go online at gaaustralia.org.au for more information on recovery from compulsive gambling. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
If this interview has raised issues for you and you need help, then you can call Lifeline on 131114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224-636 for assistance.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.